Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of mini shiurim on the book of Yehoshua. We are learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. Because there were a couple of days when I was in Toronto and I wasn't able to record, it's possible that we've lost the thread a little bit. We're at the end of Perek Tes, the end of Chapter 9. Remember that the Canaanim hear about the defeat of Jericho and then the defeat of Ai. They panic and say, we are going to attack the Jews en masse, except that there are these people called the Givonim. And they say, no, we're not. We're trying a different tactic. And Abarbanel actually said that their king is one of those kings who says we're going to band together to attack the Jews, but the people say, thank you, but we have a different approach. And they decide that they're going to attack the Jews in a different way. They're going to trick the Jews into a peace treaty. They believe, correctly or incorrectly, is something that we've discussed, but they believe that the Jews are not willing to make a peace treaty with them, that the Jews' openness to making a peace treaty was only until they crossed the Jordan River, and after that, the offer is expired and there's no more opportunity for peace. So they say, we're going to trick them. They pretend that they have come from a very distant land. They bring clothing that's all worn out. They bring food that's moldy. We talked all about this. And this is the way that they fool the Jews into thinking they're from very far away and that therefore there's no problem making a treaty with them. The Jews, well, the people are skeptical. The leaders buy the story and they make a treaty with Givon. And then 3 days later, the Jews find out, no, Givon is actually local, and they go to their city, and they find out they've been fooled, and they're very, very upset. However, the leaders say, we gave our word, we swore in God's name, we're stuck with this deal. And so the last thing that we saw in chapter 9, sentences 22, 23, was Yehoshua saying to Givon, you tricked us, this is an accursed thing to do, and now you're going to be wood choppers and water drawers for the house of God. So sentence 24, the response of Givon. Chapter 9, sentence 24. Vayanu es Yehoshua vayamru. They answered Yehoshua and they said, look, ki hu geid hu gad lavadecha is asher tziva Hashem alokecha es Moshe avdo laseis lachem es kol haaretz. We, your servants, were told about how God instructed Moshe, telling Moshe he's giving the Jews the entire land. We knew that that was coming. And that God is going to get rid of all the residents of the land before you. Now, you know, because we've discussed this before, that the original plan was not to destroy everybody. The original plan is they become Gerei Toshav, is that they accept the seven Noahide laws, they live in the land. It is true that the Jews are going to be rulers over the land. However, there's no necessary destruction, but not everything went according to plan for reasons we've already talked about. Vani Rama Odlanav Shoseinu. So they said, we were very afraid for our lives, Mipnechem, because of you. Vanaseyas Hadavar Hazeh. And that's why we played this trick on you. Vata Hininu Biyodecha. Katovacha Yashar Beinecha Lasos Lanu Asay. We are in your hands. Do what you think is good to do. Do what you think is right to do. Vayas Lahem Kain. So Yoshua did. Vayatzelo Sam Miyabine Yisrael Velo Haragum. The people were very angry. They wanted to go to war. But Yeshua said, that is not what we are going to do. He saved the Givonim. Yehoshua made them woodchoppers and water drawers for the nation. And for the altar of God until this very day. In the place Hashem would choose. And we've already explained, I think, that what this means is, first, their general purpose, woodchoppers and water drawers, for now, for the nation, for the Mishkan, as the case may be. After the land is divided and the Jews scattered to their different tribal portions, then the Givonim stay as servants of the Mishkan and the Kohanim. Now, just to follow up and talk a little bit about what happens to the Givonim after this. In Shmuel Aleph, chapters 21, 22, we get this terrible story of the city of Nov. David is on the run from Shaul. David flees to Nov, which is where the Mishkan is. He wants to get some support to be able to go on. He needs food. He needs a weapon. And he goes to the city of Nov, where the Mishkan is, and he goes to the Mishkan, and he gets some food there, and he even gets a weapon there, and it's a whole story, you can see it there. Shaul finds out, because his man Doeg, who is his own story, is there in the Mishkan on that day, and he sees David there, and he sees David talking to the priests, and he sees that David gets support, and he tells Shaul that that Nov is working with David. Shaul orders Doeg, to make a long story short, to kill out the city. Get rid of everybody. That's the story there. Fast forward to Shmuel Beis, chapter 21. And there, after Shaul is gone, Shaul is dead at this point, David is now king. Gibeonim come to David, and they complain to David that Shaul killed them, and they want justice from his family. They're not willing to accept payment. They want to kill members of Shaul's family the way that Shaul killed them. When did Shaul ever kill them? So one view is the Medrash's view, which is that when Shaul kills the Kohanim of Nov, that's the lifeline for these Givonim, and now they starve because they had lived off of the economy of the city of Nov, the city of Kohanim. Abarbanel, in that story in Shmuel Aleph, says no. He says it was because Shaul wasn't only massacring the Kohanim of Nov, but it was everybody in Nov, which included Givonim. So they were actually murdered by Shaul. Either way, they make this demand of David that Shaul's family is going to have to pay, and we don't want silver and we don't want gold. We want seven members of his family to execute. See that story in Shmuel Beis 21. So now jump to the book of Ezra. Okay, much later, beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. And Ezra chapter 8, sentence 20, describes how David placed certain people in the service of the Levium in his day, placing them in the service. Vayitain, he placed them in their service. Those people become known as Nitinim, the ones who are placed in service. We're taught that that's a reference to those Givonim who had come to David, that he said, you're going to remain in the service of the tribe of Levi. What do you mean? So this is a classic Gemara. The Gemara says, David says, these people have no mercy in them. Right? They want to kill Shaul's descendants because of what Shaul did, and they have no mercy on them. That's not what a Jew does. It's impossible for them to be part of the Jewish people. It's basic to the Jewish people that we should have mercy. So David says they're not going to be able to join the Jewish people. They're going to have to continue as servants of the tribe of Levi, serving the Mishkan. So they remain this kind of separate group. They do not convert to Judaism. Interestingly, in Ezra chapter 2, sentences 43 to 54, we find that they're still around during the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, meaning they go into exile with the Jews, apparently, and they come back with Jews from Bavel to the second Beis HaMikdash. They're identified as still not being Jewish, but this separate group still exists. So the Givonim had this very long and interesting story, and terrible and tragic story, frankly, with the Jews. Something very worth knowing more about, but that's a little bit of it. I apologize if that wasn't clear. It's a little bit, step by step by step here. But what you want to see is Shmuel Aleph chapters 21 and 22, Shmuel Bet chapter 21, Ezra, chapter 8, sentence 20, which talks about David putting people in the service of the Levium, and Ezra, chapter 2, sentences 43 to 54, which talk about them coming back for the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara about David saying that they're merciless, and therefore they can't become part of the Jewish people, can't marry into the Jewish people, is Yevamos 79a, Ayin Tes Amud Aleph. Okay. Last note on this chapter. The Jews say we're going to honor the commitment to Givon, despite the fact that it was based on fraud. Really, we could just say, forget it, we're walking away. So we already suggested the idea found in the Gemara that the reason why the Jews are going to honor the commitment is because it's a neder al das rabim. They took a vow that became publicly known, and therefore they are bound by it. The Gemara in Gittin, Mem Vav Amud Aleph, says that's not what's going on. that idea is presented there. And the Gemara answers that no, it's not actually binding on them at all. However, there's an issue of Kiddush Hashem, the sanctity of God's name, lest people think that the Jews would not honor their word sworn in the name of God. This is an issue that is still brought to this day. Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin, in his B'nai Banim, brought this when discussing actions taken in a time of war, and he said, even though we have many imperatives and many missions and many requirements that we have to fulfill in order to guarantee our safety, nonetheless, you always need to worry about Kiddush Hashem, even in such circumstances. And this comes up in discussions about applying international law in Israel. There was the famous Nakash case of extradition of a Jew from Israel to France. This comes up, this discussion of to what extent are we bound by international conventions as a function of Kiddush Hashem. More to discuss, obviously, on that as well. But tomorrow, God willing, we are going to start Perek Yud, Chapter 10, in which we find out that there are consequences to the things you do. And really, we're not the ones who find it out as much as Givon is the one that finds it out, because they're going to be attacked by all these Kena'anim because they betrayed them by joining the Jews. And the Jews are going to be called on by the Givonim to defend them. So, God willing, that we'll see starting tomorrow.